I have another tragic story in today's episode. To date, over 600 law enforcement officers have been killed in the line of duty. In this episode, I'm going to tell you about a single night when three of them made the ultimate sacrifice. Welcome to the NC Everything Podcast. I'm your host, Curtis, and this is the bi-weekly show where I talk about everything that has anything to do with North Carolina. I'm glad you're all here. I've had a few episodes kind of close together that covered some kind of tragedy, a crime, a murder. And I've said a few times I'm not really a true crime podcast. I guess, you know, when I need to be, I'll put that hat on. But this should be my last crime episode for a little while. I'm still covering listener suggestions, and I don't have another crime episode in my upcoming forecast that I can tell. But before we get into all that, you know I have to go through all my promotions and stuff. So if you like the show, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. And if you're listening and you'd rather watch, you can find me on YouTube. And if you're watching and you just kind of want to listen, I can be found on most podcast players. You can also get more NC Everything by joining the Facebook group. And if you have a listener suggestion, you can contact me and you can suggest anything you want. Or you can just say hello, or you like the show, you hate the show. I haven't said that in a while. I love feedback. I love hearing from my listeners. And as far as listener suggestions go, I've had a few that I wasn't able to put a full episode together. If you suggest something and there's just not a whole lot of material, I kind of hold on to it. I may do an episode full of shorts at some point. So whether you think it's enough material or not, if you have an idea for an episode, feel free to write in. And if you want even more NC Everything content, my wife and I have started doing a show called Tasting NC, where we taste North Carolina products. We're trying restaurants. We're focusing just on North Carolina foods. And now I've told you about all that, and you might be wondering, how do I get access to all that? Most of you know, there'll be links in the description below for the YouTube, for the Tasting NC, for the Facebook group. As far as contact, a lot of you know I shut down my website. You can still contact me right through the Facebook group, or you can email me at thenceverythingpodcast@gmail.com. And I thought about it. The last time I kind of went through some of my old emails, I had some emails from listeners, and they kind of got lost in the mix. If you email me about the show, put in the subject line contact or listener, something that would kind of stand out. I haven't really decided on one thing yet, but let's say listener email. If you put listener email in there, that's going to definitely stand out. Oh, yeah. And I should have said this at the beginning. I forgot. If you want to skip all the talking at the beginning, right at the top of the description below, there'll be a timestamp of when the actual content starts. And speaking of that, I think I'm just about wrapped up, so let's go ahead and get into the content. Today we're going to be talking about James William Hutchins. James William Hutchins. I always want to say Hutchinson for some reason. But James William Hutchinson, there we go. James William Hutchins, he's in the middle of the largest one-day homicide of law enforcement officers in North Carolina. And this was actually a listener suggestion, but I forgot to make a note, or I've lost my note of who suggested it. So if you're the one who suggested James William Hutchins and you're still listening, thank you for the suggestion. And I want to start by saying I went to the Officer Down Memorial page at odmp.com. And according to odmp.com, to date, there's been 635 line of duty deaths for law enforcement officers. And I'm not sure how often that page is updated. And it's been a while since I've read list, but I kind of want to give you the list here. It's not a long list. But again, according to odmp.com, out of the 635 deaths, 3 were accidental, 9 were aircraft accidents, 1 animal related, 19 assault, 80 automobile crashes, 33 COVID-19, 2 drowned, 1 duty related illness, 1 electrocuted, 1 explosion, 1 fall, 331 gunfire, 14 from inadvertent gunfire, 33 from a heart attack, 2 from heat stroke, and 16 from motorcycle crashes. Oh, that was not the end of my list. I just forgot to, or I didn't scroll down. 2 were stabbed, 3 were struck by a train, 20 were struck by a vehicle, 3 died in training accidents, 39 during vehicle pursuits, and 21 during or involved in vehicular assaults. By the way, I have zero time to edit this episode, so you're going to get all the ums and mess ups. And I mean, it's okay. I kind of want a regular, raw, real deal show, but it's Thursday, and I have to upload this tomorrow for Saturday. And so I hope you don't mind some of the flaws. Anyway, James William Hutchins. First, I'm going to give you kind of the backstory. He was born on March 26th, 1929 in Rutherford County, North Carolina. And this is the same county that Hickory Nut Gorge is in, which I covered just recently in episode 105. Anyway, James, he grew up mean and violent. He was known to have a really short temper. And sometimes they say he would lash out and attack people for seemingly no reason. And as his life developed, he had a wife and kids, and his anger, it wasn't spared on his wife and his children. Now, I couldn't find a whole lot about his raising, but most likely, you know, studies have shown if he was like this, most likely he had a pretty rough childhood. You know, he was a victim of abuse himself. So it kind of made his whole life pretty troubled. He never really held down any long-term jobs, and eventually he would enter the Air Force. This would have been during the Korean War, and I tried to find whether he saw combat or not, and I never found anything definitive. But he did receive training as a rifleman. Now, even though he received training, I don't know exactly how long he was in the military, but it really didn't last too long. In 1954, he would go AWOL, or absent without leave, and he would head for New Mexico, where he would commit his first murder. Hutchins, he was hitchhiking, I guess in New Mexico, and he was picked up by a truck driver named Bruce. It's Bruce Weibel, W-E-I-B-E-L. He was a 32-year-old truck driver. I don't know exactly what led to the murder. There wasn't a whole lot on it, but he eventually killed Bruce Weibel, wrapped his body up, and hid it under a bridge. Then he stole Bruce Weibel's truck and drove to Oklahoma. And in Oklahoma was where he was arrested and charged for murder, although it was eventually knocked down to voluntary manslaughter. Now Hutchins, he claimed that Bruce actually attacked him and that he was just defending himself, and there really wasn't a whole lot of evidence to sway him one way or the other. I guess he also involuntarily wrapped his body up and hid it and stole his rig. That's all in the name of defense, I guess. Anyway, he was sentenced to 5 years in prison. And this led to Hutchins being discharged from the Air Force due to conduct, obviously. Hutchins gets out of prison in 1959, and to no surprise, he still just, you know, couldn't get his shit together. In 1966, he would attack and beat up the husband of his ex-wife. And I don't know how bad the beating was, but it must have been pretty bad because he was charged with assault and battery with the intent to kill. He was given a suspended 8-month sentence and fined $200, which, I don't know, maybe that's harsh in 1966, but, you know, he almost killed somebody, and he more or less got a slap on the wrist and got charged $200. And in case some of you don't know, a suspended sentence, that slap on the wrist, a suspended sentence means we're not going to send you to prison, but if you promise to be good, you know, we'll let you keep walking the streets. And that's exactly what happened. But not for too long. I think it was about 6 months. I think 6 months he assaulted some more people. It didn't really go into detail on that. But he got into some more trouble beating people up, and he ended up serving 6 more months in jail. And this brings us to the night of May 31st, 1979. Sorry about that. If some of you remember from my last episode, I have a new puppy, and he's not very polite. So I'll have to probably edit some of this barking out. I don't want to edit, but I'll probably have to edit some of his antics out of this show. Anyway, the evening of May 31st, 1979, Hutchins' daughter, named Charlotte, she just finished up her senior year in high school, and she comes home from school, and she's getting ready for this, I don't know if it's graduation party or the actual ceremonies for the senior graduation, but she's at home getting ready for that. And she starts making a drink, an alcoholic drink, for the after party. And this pisses James Hutchins off. And he wasn't pissed that this underage girl was making an alcoholic drink. I lost my note in here, but he was actually pissed because she used the wrong alcohol, or she used some alcohol he didn't want her to use or thought she shouldn't use, and this set him off, and he went to beating on Charlotte. Now, when this attack started, the rest of the family come to try to help her, and this triggered an attack on the whole entire family. So he's going through the house just beating up everybody in sight. Eventually, Charlotte's able to make it out of the house, and she runs to a neighbor's house and calls 911. This 911 call goes to the Rutherford County Sheriff's Department, and they dispatch Captain Roy Husky to the scene for a domestic disturbance. To my knowledge, Captain Roy Husky had never heard of James Hutchins, had no idea about his background or his temper or anything like that. Another thing that he didn't know was that Hutchins had set up in his house with a high-powered rifle. And I don't know if Charlotte had came back and told Hutchins that she had called the police, but somehow I guess he knew they were coming and he was waiting for them. So Captain Roy Husky, he shows up on scene, pulls up in the driveway, and as soon as he gets out of the car, he is shot in the head by a high-powered rifle from inside the house. And so Captain Husky, at age 42, he dies right in the driveway of James Hutchins. And now we're going to Deputy Sheriff Millard Messersmith. After Captain Husky was killed, they couldn't get him on the radio, and so they dispatched Deputy Messersmith to go check on Husky. Well, Messersmith, he pulls up to the address, and immediately he sees Captain Husky laying dead on the ground, so he throws his car in reverse to try to get the hell out of there. Hutchins, who was still in the house, still with his high-powered rifle, saw the patrol car start backing up, and he opened fire. I'm not sure how many times he shot, but Messersmith was also shot in the head through the windshield of his car. Messersmith's car was found rolled into a ditch, and he was found slumped over the steering wheel. Now, they said when they found Messersmith, he was slumped over the steering wheel, but it was causing the horn to honk. And I'm not trying to be funny here, but I know in the movies, when you pull up on a scene and you hear a horn steadily honking, you know, that's always a really unnerving sound. Well, a neighbor, and it may be the neighbor that the 911 call's house was made from. That's weird. It may be the neighbor whose house they used to call 911. He had saw the whole shooting go down, so he calls the sheriff's department and lets them know that, you know, two of their deputies had been shot right there in the driveway. And things just got worse from there. The dispatcher who was working that night, well, I don't know if it was a male or female, but they fainted when they heard that two deputies had been killed on this domestic dispute call. And I'm not blaming the dispatcher. If you know anything about small towns, and if you're from North Carolina, you probably know a lot about small towns. You don't get too many murder calls if you get any murders at all. And you rarely, if ever, I mean very, very rarely, get murdered police officers. And it's probably never happened that you get two murdered police officers on the same scene in the same night. So the dispatcher's unconscious. There's a jailer in the next room, and he hears the radio going crazy, but he doesn't hear the dispatcher responding to the radio, so he gets pretty concerned, and he goes in there to check out what's going on, and he finds the unconscious dispatcher. Well, in response, this jailer sits down at the dispatch chair, and he starts trying to handle the radio. Now, obviously, he hasn't had any training on dispatching, and you can see this is becoming a series of events that just keep adding to this horrible night. So on top of two dead police officers, James Hutchins is in the wind somewhere. You know, nobody knows where he's at. Not many people even know what's going on yet. We'll talk about that in a second. You got this jailer who's running the radio. He was able to dispatch ambulances to the Hutchins home. And so you got dispatchers on the radio, or ambulance drivers on the radio too. So it's starting to get pretty chaotic. You know, the sheriff's department, they know they've had two officers shot and probably don't know if they're alive or dead. You got ambulance drivers screaming around trying to figure out what's going on, and you have a jailer running the radio. Now, dispatching, I can tell you from my time being a volunteer firefighter, dispatching has come a long ways, and I may talk a little bit more about that in a minute. But back then, the protocol for this sort of situation, the dispatcher would have contacted the State Highway Patrol regional headquarters, and they would have kind of gave a briefing of what happened, what's going on. They would have gave a description of the shooter, James Hutchins, They would have gave a description of his vehicle if they could, and kind of be on the lookout and start spreading the word to look out for this guy. Because the jailer was running the radio, none of that happened. Now let's get back to James Hutchins for a minute. After the two shootings, he grabs his rifle, gets in his car, and he hits the road. So, like I said, he's kind of in the wind. Nobody knows where he is. And that brings us to Highway Patrolman Robert Peterson. Robert Peterson, he was assigned to Rutherford County, and on this night, he was kind of set up at the McDowell and Rutherford County line on Highway 221. And Peterson, he's kind of hanging out. There's another trooper there. You ever see the troopers kind of pulled up beside each other? That's what they're doing. There's another trooper there, and they're kind of hanging out. And that's when Peterson hears some kind of radio traffic on his scanner. And the reason I say scanner, in 1979, the Rutherford County Sheriff's Department, when they sent out dispatches or communications, it went to every law enforcement agency around except for Highway Patrol. That was just the way it was. And so Peterson, he didn't have any communications with the direct communications with the Sheriff's Department. So in his patrol car, he kept a police scanner so he can kind of, you know, stay on top of things or try to stay on top of things anyway. And the scanner he had in 1979, it wasn't state-of-the-art or anything like that. The transmissions were scratchy and choppy and kind of breaking up, but he could tell that there was, you know, panic in the voices of the people on there talking. And so he tries several times to contact his headquarters to see if something's going on, but for whatever reason, he can't really get anybody on the horn. He doesn't know what's going on. All he really knows is something's going on near Ruthven. So Peterson does what most law enforcement agents would do. He starts heading toward Ruston, not knowing what's going on over there or what he's heading into. About the time Peterson enters the Ruston city limits on Highway 221, Hutchins goes flying past him. Naturally, Peterson does a U-turn and starts chasing after this speeder. He has no idea, again, what's anything about two cops being murdered, anything about a domestic dispute call. He just knows this vehicle just tore past him. So it's time to pull over and give a speeding ticket. The next time Peterson's voice is heard on the radio, he's given a description of the vehicle and his location, and he claimed that the suspect had fled on foot toward the trees. And most likely at this time, Peterson still had no idea that he had just tried to pull over a cop killer. Ironically, it was about the time that Peterson's last transmission went through that the Highway Patrol was made fully aware of what had happened that night. And unfortunately, it would be a too little too late situation. So after the Highway Patrol got a briefing of Hutchins and the two killed deputies, all the Highway Patrol started rushing toward the Hutchins residence. But again, that's not where Hutchins was. At some point, somebody remembered that Peterson had pulled over somebody in Ruston, and they started worrying that he may have accidentally pulled over Hutchins or inadvertently pulled over Hutchins, not knowing about what was going on. So you can see they're starting to put pieces together, but again, it's too late. And so they started sending troopers to Hutchins and to Peterson's last known location. When they get there, they see his patrol car pulled up behind Hutchins' vehicle, and the blue lights are flashing. Unfortunately, they would find Peterson dead on the ground beside his patrol car. And the scene is described like it was obvious that Peterson had been fired upon and he took cover beside the engine block of his car when he was shot in the head. Peterson was 37 years old. So now, three law enforcement officers have been killed in the same night. And again, this is the largest one-day homicide so far in the history of North Carolina. Well, they knew Hutchins was somewhere in those woods, or they assumed he was. And again, three officers killed, that's some serious mess. So this triggered 200 law enforcement officers from Western North Carolina and South Carolina, upstate South Carolina is what it says. They headed to the scene and began a 12-hour search of those woods for Hutchins. And Hutchins, he'd be captured the next day in those woods. Naturally, the people of Rutherford County, they wanted Hutchins' head on a plate, and I don't think anybody could blame him. So for his own undeserving safety, he was relocated and jailed in Cleveland County. Later, he was moved to Buncombe County, and it was all to, you know, keep this man safe. And I found my note about what triggered the whole thing when I said his daughter Charlotte was making a drink. On June 12, 1979, his daughter Charlotte, she testified in Rutherford Court about, you know, that night and what happened. And she said there was an argument over the amount of vodka that she was pouring into her drink that she was making. So keep that in mind. He beats up his whole family and kills three police officers because she used either too much or too little vodka. And this started all of it. And really, I mean, if we're going to be honest, these law enforcement officers didn't die over vodka. They died because James Hutchins is a damn lunatic. Well, the trial was starting on September 17th, 1979, and the prosecutors, they were demanding that James Hutchins gets the death penalty. Now, like most killers who are afraid of their own death, you know, he tried everything to get out of it. He pled not guilty, and the trial went on, but it really didn't last too long. In fact, it only took a few days before a jury found him guilty, guilty of two counts of first-degree murder and one count of second-degree murder. And I'm assuming, it didn't say, but I'm assuming Peterson was the second-degree murderer because he set up and waited for the two deputies to show up at his house before he killed them. With Peterson, I think it more kind of looked like a gunfight, which, you know, he already killed two deputies. I don't think he had any problem killing a trooper, but he probably got second-degree for him because, you know, it was a gunfight. It wasn't like he was set up and waiting for Peterson to pull him over. Well, he was sentenced to die in the state's gas chamber, and his execution date was set for October 12th, 1979. And like always, there's appeals. And I guess a lawyer wouldn't be doing his job if they didn't try to appeal it. In fact, that's why a lot of death penalties last so long, because criminal rights, you know, I've talked about that. You have a certain amount of time to appeal your sentence. They don't want to kill you too quick. Well, because of the appeals process, the execution date was pushed back to October 15th, 1981, and then January 22nd, 1982. And finally, a date was set for October 15th, 1982. But even that date got pushed back even farther. And so a new and final execution date was set for January 13th, 1984. And another thing, and again, if you know me or you listen to a few of my crime podcasts, you know I have a problem with our justice system. James Hutchins, he got to choose the way he was going to die. It was down to him, lethal injection or gas chamber. And he ultimately chose lethal injection. And why not? You know, you shot three police officers in the head. You know, a needle in the arm is probably the most cowardly way to go, I suppose. Anyway, I'm not getting into my issues with criminal justice at this time. But even though I said his final execution date was set for January 13th, Hutchins got the needle in the arm on March 16th, 1984. He would die at age 54 at State, North Carolina. I got tongue-tied. He would die at age 54 at North Carolina Central Prison in Raleigh. He became the first person to be executed in North Carolina since 1977. And as far as the aftermath goes, I'm sure a whole lot of stuff changed because of this night. I can't cover all of it here. But they did work on getting a lot better communications between State Highway Patrol and state law enforcement and county law enforcement. We'll just say it that way. There was a lot of training that was created because of this. You know, it was kind of a cautionary tale. And so they used this night as a training on how a domestic dispute can escalate to a triple homicide. You know, don't think that a domestic dispute is just, you know, boyfriend and girlfriend throwing beer bottles at each other. You know, it's kind of you never know what you're going to walk into. And again, I'm speaking partly about some of my time on the fire department. You really never know where you're going or how it's going to play out. There was also a movie made about this night. It was made in 1987, and it was produced by Earl Owensby, who's also a North Carolina native. And the movie's called Damon's Law. It says that in the movie, they portray Rutherford County Sheriff Damon Husky hunting for the man who killed his brother, Roy Husky. And that brings me to the end of the episode. Again, I'm not going to do a whole lot of editing to this. I'm probably going to put my little theme song at the beginning and throw that stuff in there, but I have no idea how this episode will actually play out. And I'll be honest with you, I probably won't ever know. I've never listened back to one of my episodes except for editing. I've never watched one of my videos except for editing, but I don't know if most podcasters do that, but I don't listen to myself more than I have to because I listen to myself all the time. Anyway, even though it was a tragic episode, I hope you enjoyed it. And if you like it, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. Check out the Facebook group. Check out the YouTube channel if you're listening. Check out podcast players if you're just watching. And don't forget to write me if you have an idea for an episode. I don't mean to stumble all over this. I am very tired. And in the last episode, I said I was very tired, and I was. I'm not always tired when I record, but I've been working third shift this week, and I got home about 3 o'clock this morning. I didn't sleep a whole lot. It's 9:30 in the morning. So I'm going to, when I wrap this up, go in here and try to get some sleep. But in my head, despite my fatigue, this has been a pretty good episode. I think it was a sad episode, but I think I feel like I did a pretty good job on this one. I hope I did. Anyway, I don't want to ramble on more than I have to. Whoever you are who suggested this episode, I'm sorry I forgot to write your name down or I lost the note. But again, thank you for the suggestion, Mystery Man. And for the rest of you, I'll talk to you in a couple weeks.